From KMXT in Kodiak, it's the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Terry Haynes.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. For more information, call 1-907-235-4966 or online at alaskaboat.com.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
Tourists are lured to the Kenai Peninsula every summer by the promise of big catches from the decks of saltwater fishing boats. But as regulations on halibut and king salmon fishing have ramped up in the last decade, charter guides have branched out to another species, rockfish. This year, the Alaska Department of Fish and Game is limiting rockfish harvest by emergency order to make sure the population doesn't plummet to the point of no return. KDLL's Sabine Pooks has more.
Mike Booz with the department's Division of Sportfish says the new bag limits for rockfish, announced Thursday, are preventative.
Things are okay. We're just on an increasing harvest trend that is likely to lead to unsustainable levels.
He traces that trend back in part to 2014, when the council that manages fishing in Alaska's federal waters passed a catch-sharing plan to allocate halibut harvest between commercial and sport fisheries. He says right away, charters started going more for rockfish. Meanwhile, the department has tightened regulations on king salmon fishing too, including closures and decreased bag limits. That's as king salmon across Alaska continue to suffer. Again, he says those restrictions have pushed saltwater charters to broaden their scope.
Within the day, they're spreading their effort among species.
Ray DeBartoleben owns Long Live the King's Lodge in Soldotna. He also has a saltwater boat out of Homer and will start taking clients out for the season later this month. He's been fishing since the 1980s, when he says it was possible to get a 200-pound halibut. He says he no longer targets the clientele that expects that sort of fishing.
That clientele is gone for me. So I've really just spent money on marketing and just got new clients that they pull up a halibut that's 25, 30 pounds and their first thing they say is, wow.
He says there's still days when he'll take clients out to fish for halibut alone, but he started focusing more on trips for halibut and rockfish over the last 7 years. Rockfish are found further offshore, as far as the Chugach Islands in Cook Inlet on the other side of Ketchumak Bay State Park. Brian Ritchie is a charter operator out of Homer and a vice president of the Homer Charter Association.
That is a long way for a charter vessel to travel, and it does increase fuel costs, but it's something that businesses here have shown they're willing to take on, and it's something that we've certainly adapted to.
He says Homer area fishermen have been eyeing rockfish abundance for a few years now. Recently, the total rockfish harvest in Cook Inlet saltwater skyrocketed to over 50,000 fish a year, according to Fish and Game. Booz says the species is susceptible to overharvest. They don't migrate much like salmon do. They stick to the spots they like, which makes them easier to catch.
Because we know right where they're going to be every day.
Rockfish are also slow to mature, and they live a long time. Boo says that makes it hard for them to bounce back, which has happened to rockfish fisheries in the lower 48. He says that's another reason to be conservative with the restrictions. The new bag limits are 3 a day in Cook Inlet, down from 5, and 3 in the Gulf Coast area, down from 4. Richie says fishermen in Cook Inlet are getting used to diversifying as regulations continue to shift. Still, he says it can be hard to adjust.
That kind of uncertainty, when it's your business and it's your job, it can be stressful. And I think that it's been stressful the past 2 years, especially for Homer area businesses and operators.
DeBartoleben says another challenge for charters has been increased gas prices. Those prices last summer sometimes doubled the cost of fueling up for charters. While he's worried about the changes, he says he's optimistic that halibut and salmon are rebounding. And he says he thinks there's been a mentality shift.
I think the new mentality of fishermen, they just want to go fishing and have a good time. I've had to change my attitude on how much fish do I need? How much fish do I want? So I kind of try to pass that on to my customers, you know, the attitude of we're going to go out and we're going to have fun and we're going to catch some fish and we're going to go eat it.
He says clients want the experience of going out and catching fish, no matter the species.
In Kenai, I'm Sabine Pooks.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard accepted hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their families. AMSEA at amse.org or 907-747-3287.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report is provided by the Stosh and Claudia Anderson Fund in recognition of the fishing industry, which provides over 58,000 Alaskan jobs from a renewable source.
In December, the native village of Kotzebue received $140,000 from the federal government to expand the monitoring of algal blooms in the region. Scientists say it's an emerging problem and the funding couldn't come soon enough. Amid a changing Arctic and warming waters, they believe toxic blooms may proliferate in the region. KOTC's Desiree Hagen has this report.
12 years ago, Alex Whiting noticed something odd in the water around Kotzebue.
There was a chartreuse green thick slick that was in front of Kotzebue and also in Illivac Bay. And nobody had seen that kind of a thick, bright green slick before.
Whiting is the environmental program director for the native village of Kotzebue. After the initial discovery, he reached out to colleagues at East Carolina University who identified the pink, bright green slick as an algal bloom. Algal blooms occur when there is an excessive amount of cyanobacteria, which is also known as blue-green algae. The next year, Whiting says he collected more samples and reached out to several researchers who identified two species of cyanobacteria that had not been documented in the region.
Aphanizomenon is one of them, and Anabina or Dolichospermum is the other one. And we did notice that there was, in fact, toxins.
Whiting says cyanobacteria isn't necessarily a threat. He says blue-green algae have been on the planet for around 3.5 billion years and were some of the first life forms. In fact, Whiting says they may be the reason we have oxygen in the atmosphere.
Although they're one of the least known species by your average person, arguably they're one of the most important species on the planet.
Whiting says that toxins are a byproduct of cyanobacteria. And in large numbers, these toxins can kill fish and wildlife. In humans, the toxins can accumulate in the liver and may cause other health problems. The blooms have even been documented to change the migratory patterns of fish species. Whiting says there's still a lot of unknowns when it comes to the rapid growth of the algae, which is why monitoring is so important. This winter, now over a decade since Whiting's initial discovery of the bloom, the Kotzebue tribe secured $140,000 in federal funds to monitor the phenomenon. Whiting says the funds will allow scientists to study and test bacteria levels locally. Ajit Subramaniam is a microbial oceanographer and professor. He joined Whiting in Kotzebue in late March. He says the increase in blue-green algae is the result of climate change.
As your listeners probably only know too well, this is a system that is changing quite rapidly. And the emerging threats from things like harmful algal blooms, cyanotoxins, are one of many manifestations of the change that's going on.
Subramaniam says the algal blooms in the Northwest Arctic are oddly similar to outbreaks along the Mississippi River, which are fed from runoff from industrial fertilizers.
Both of them are caused by the excess presence of nutrients. It is just that on the case of the Mississippi, it is through direct human activity, whereas here it is more likely to be a case where it's a thawing of the tundra that is starting to release these excess nutrients and causing this.
Subramaniam says there are different types of bacterial blooms, and there have been new species recently identified in the Bering and Chukchi Seas. He says the cyanobacteria found in Kotzebue Sound is somewhat unique because it's occurring at a higher latitude in areas where salt water and fresh water mix. However, due in part to warming Arctic temperatures, he says any open water in the tundra can contain cyanobacteria. Both Subramaniam and Whiting emphasize that potential algal blooms are not a reason to avoid subsistence or native food sources. Whiting says he has not yet observed levels that were alarming or that could kill fish or wildlife. But, he says, continued monitoring of Kotzebue's water is important. In Kotzebue, I'm Desiree Hagen.
Statewide support of the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from Satellite Technical Services, providing satellite communication solutions for commercial fishermen across the state of Alaska. Information and dealers can be found at satellitewest.com or by calling 206-321-6896.
The state has released forecasts for this year's Yukon River salmon returns. Alaska Department of Fish and Game Yukon River summer season salmon manager Dina Jallin says the number of kings coming back is predicted to be more than last year's 50,000, which was the worst since run assessment projects began in 1995.
Our forecast is for a run between 62,000 to 104,000 fish. And below around 150,000, we don't tend to meet goals either in Alaska or Canada.
The Yukon River summer chum salmon forecast spans both sides of last year's return of 480,000, which was the fourth worst since 1995.
The forecast is between 280,000 to 900,000.
The drainage-wide summer chum low-end escapement goal is 500,000. Below escapement goal runs last year resulted in fishing closures for both kings and summer chums. Jallin says that will likely be the case again this year, at least for kings.
But for summer chum salmon, we're hoping that the run comes in strong and that ideally by the midpoint, it'll look like we're going to exceed the drainage-wide escapement goal and we'll hopefully be able to offer an opportunity with selective gear to go for summer chum salmon while releasing king salmon alive.
As far as the Yukon River fall chum return, the state is forecasting a run of between 112,000 and 602,000 fish. Last year's run was 242,000 fall chums, well below the lower end escapement goal of 300,000, and subsistence fishing remained closed.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from Madsen, providing twice-weekly service to Alaska's Emerald Isle.